So hello and welcome to this week's instalment of Nucleus Investment Insights. And as you may be aware, the CoreLogic monthly price movement report came out over the weekend, and when viewed quarterly, there was a surprise surge to the upside in Australian property. So we thought it quite timely to discuss the return of the housing of the Australian housing boom. Joining us today and running through the numbers, we've got our chief economist, Leith Van Unselen. Hello, Leith.
G'day, Tim. Boom is back, baby.
We've got our head of investments, Damien Klassen. G'day, Damien.
Hi, Tim.
And of course, we've got a very special guest, and we did promise a special guest last week. I'm glad you've been able to make time to join us, Catherine Cashmore. Hello.
Hello.
Excellent. So let's jump into it. We've got a quick agenda here. So we're going to be running through the CoreLogic report and what it depicts, the reasons for the property upswing. We're then going to get some coalface viewpoints of the recent surge from Catherine. Really looking forward to that. And then wrapping out into the question of sustainability of this recent uptick as well. So with no further ado, we'll hand over to Leith for the CoreLogic run-through.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Look, the boom is certainly back. When you talk about the data now, CoreLogic released its monthly results for August over the weekend, and it was, you know, quite strong. Prices rose by about 1% nationally, and Sydney and Melbourne grew by nearly 1.5% each over the month. And we've also seen quite a sharp uplift in quarterly growth, whereby values are up about 1% nationally over the quarter. And That again has been led by Sydney and Melbourne, whose growth has expanded quite rapidly. Now, of course, the other major capitals are still down over the quarter, but it's the two major markets where prices have risen, as one would expect.
So when we're saying boom is back, we're not quite the tongue's a little bit in the cheek there. We're
still, absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, that's the talk.
Not claiming victory yet. Yeah.
No, of course not. I'm definitely being a little bit cheeky there. Certainly, look, we had many months. I think it was about 14 or 15 months or something where the national prices fell in a row, and then July they rose a tiny bit, and August they rose quite substantially again by about 1%. So it has been quite a sharp turnaround. You know, whether or not sustainable, etc., we'll talk about a bit later. But I just basically want to give a state of play on what the data is doing. Now, Tim, can you flip over the next slide? So the only current indicator we've got, really, which sort of tells you how things are going right now, because everything else is backward-looking, is auction clearances. Now, auction clearance rates in Sydney and Melbourne, final clearance rates are now ticked up to the mid-70s as of today. Now, the charts are put up here. They're actually three-month moving average, so they don't fully capture the uplift. But anyone who's looking at this live can see a massive spike where basically clearance rates have risen to around the 2017 highs before the housing downturn. And you can also see there's a very strong correlation between clearance rates and prices there. And, clearance rates do seem to lead, and prices are rebounding along with them. So I've got Sydney there, and the next chart is Melbourne, which shows basically exactly the same thing. Now, there is one caveat here, however, if we flip over to the next chart, and that's that auction volumes, according to CoreLogic's data, are running around. It's very choppy, as you can see, because you know it's very seasonal, but auction volumes are running around half the 2017 boom time level. So what this tells you is that it is quite a thin market. Clearance rates are picking up, prices are picking up, but the actual number of properties transacting is very low. Now, we would expect, obviously, listings and everything to rise from here and into the spring season, especially now the market's picking up. But how it stands now is it's a strongly rising market, but based on very thin volumes, which sort of does suggest that the boom's not quite as strong as indicated.
Actually, just to put this in perspective as well, Catherine, if somebody was a home seller or an investor who wanted to get rid of their home, and in the last 2 or 3 weeks there's sort of, oh, prices have turned back up again, here's my chance to sell, and they wanted to go to auction, are we talking what, 6 to 8 weeks usually you'd be?
Yeah, there's a planning time for it. So I think that's why, you know, there's been a lot of talk about, oh, what if a flood of stock comes online? Mm. Because now prices are going up, people are going to put their properties on the market. And of course, the agents have a lead into this because it takes time. You have to prepare to put your house on the market. There's costs that are involved.
And just the marketing of going, well, I don't want to do one this weekend because I need enough time to market so I get enough people to turn up.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, just to kind of interject on that point, that's not what is happening at the moment. There's not a flood of stock about to come on for spring. That's not what any of the agents are reporting. And if you think about it reasonably, it makes a lot of sense, because when a market starts to turn down and prices start to fall, initially people hold off because they think, well, it might, you know, it might turn around. This might just be temporary. Something might happen. And of course, as that accelerates, as it did throughout the course of 2018, the flood of stock comes on the market from people that bring forward their plans to sell. And they think, well, if we wait, if, you know, we were thinking about selling in a few months' time, if we wait, prices are going to be even lower. And so you get a flood of stock, which is the carnage that needs to be cleared. And it happens in the middle of the cycle. And it also happens at the end of the cycle, where you get the flood of foreclosures of people that need to sell. That flood of stock depresses prices even further. And then when you see a turnaround in that is where your first indication on the ground that the market has changed. And that turnaround happened, and I think I said this before when I was in, prior to the election. It wasn't the election and the Royal Commission wound up, and then we still had to get through the election and we still had to have some bank loosening. And that happened prior to it. And that's when the clearance rate started to tick up a little bit on that. To think now that you're going, it's a bit like when you get a first home buyer incentive and first home buyers rush in and then you get like they rush out and the market gets a slump and you think, well, where are they? Or where have all the first home buyers gone? They've all bought their plans to buy. Well, that's similarly what's happening. The agents are saying, and we're not seeing it, you know, the stock is really tight. And even though, you know, you'll get a little bit more on for spring, maybe because it's a seasonal thing, and sometimes you do, and particularly down in the peninsula. But it's not like, you know, they're down on their previous spring. So, and also the psychology of it. If you see prices are rising and you don't necessarily have to sell now, are you going to think, well, I might wait for 6 months?
Well, it's been, especially if you've seen a higher price. If you're thinking of selling and you don't have to sell and you've gone, well, it was valued at 800,000 and then it got down to 700 and now we're back to 710. I can get to 800, you know. Once I get to 800, I'm back out again. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's, you know, there's still people out there that do need to sell, and, you know, we'll talk a little bit about where the real push in the market is coming from if you want to. But
I was just interested in terms of, you know, they do, some of those lines go quite quickly on that. I'm just interested in knowing,
It's not, you know, if it was just purely like the stock market where investors can step in and step out, it would be different. Mm. Investors do in the housing market step in and step out. They can, the buyers can change their mind on a whim. The sellers don't so much. So that's a bit more of a set and a bit more of a lead up time.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry. Okay, sure thing. So we'll jump into, and we'll maybe, segue that into the reasons for the rebound. But perhaps before we do that, maybe kick off with some recent coal-faced experience you sort of were talking about a little bit earlier.
Yeah, so I mean, when I last came in, I said, it was after the election, because I remember saying, well, every real estate agent's got a smile on his face this morning. Who wants to work for a living? Gets bad speculation, back to mortgage fraud. let the libs get in. But the turnaround has been unbelievable, and it's driven from the bottom end, primarily from first home buyers. And I've, on my own books, I've never had so many first home buyers, but I've been flooded by home buyers. And the other things that I'm seeing on the ground, and it's not, you know, agents saying, we had 70 people through an open. You know, we opened at the beginning of the open. There was a queue down the street. I tweeted one the other day. I write for Portfolio Publishing and I sent it out to the subscriber base of a queue down the street for a very average, fairly newly built townhouse in Cheltenham, you know, middle ring suburb of Melbourne, pretty ordinary, where you've got a queue of buyers down the street waiting to get through an open for inspection. Now, I've never seen that in the whole, even in, you know, the 2007, where the market was really strong and things were selling higher, and you know, recent, over the recent boom that we had between 2012 and 2017, never ever had to queue for open for inspections, not on properties like that.
Wow.
I mean, there was one at the weekend where there were over 100 people that went through, and the agent started to take names at the beginning, and by the time she got to the end of the queue, they were having to close up because they got to get to the next one, and she was turning people away. And these aren't properties that is a feature of there being low stock.
Mm.
It's a feature of there being a lot of first home buyers in the market, which are being driven on by incentives. It's also the fact that the banks have easier lending conditions for home buyers than they do for investors and developers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for any speculators out there, it does actually leave quality listings with not so much demand on them, like, you know, the developers that need to sell with plans and permits, where there's not so much competition on those properties. You can still pick up those for pretty good prices. But mm-hmm. these small townhouses, newly renovated, newly built, poor builds, poor renovations, cheap properties, handkerchief pockets of land, going way beyond where comparable value is, but passing on the valuation because they've been sold at auction.
Mm. Okay.
There are still things that aren't passing on valuations, I can tell you that. But, you know, if something gets sold under competition, then the value generally does. But it's been just unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it.
And is this, I'm assuming this is sort of like a, I don't know, the 300 to 800 sort of range. Where did we cap out?
So, I mean, I can only talk about the properties that I've been shopping on, and that's sort of between the 700 to 900 price range. And then I've got a few buyers that are kind of in the upper end, and then a few buyers that aren't looking for that type of property where we're looking for land and development sites. But particularly with the home buyers kind of in that, I mean, I suppose anywhere, I don't know, I bought in Fitzroy at the weekend over a mil, so I guess, you know, it kind of stretches to over that. But that heated market, yeah, that kind of home buyer, because home buyers, if you look at the ABS stats, your home buyer isn't a single person going and looking. Your home buyer is normally a freshly formed couple are saying, okay, you know, we're not necessarily going to go after apartments because that doesn't cut it for a home buyer. Most home buyers are going after those smaller townhouses because they don't want to do much renovation. They might not understand it's really not the best investment. It's not like they're going after something that is going to, I think that's where the sustainability comes from a buyer's perspective. It's not like this is going to really do fantastically well over the next 10 years. They'd be better off going and buying an old house on a block of land where the land is all being subdivided around it, and it's something that's decreasing in supply. So it's not like they're going for the best properties, but they're going for these small properties, and the competition is intense on them.
I've got to get my foot in the door.
And, you know, Melbourne's a volatile market because it's an auction market. And when if most sales were happening behind doors, private transactions, you don't get that feeling. But when you've missed out on two or three auctions, and bear in mind, an auction is all about winning. And when you're at the auction, you're not thinking about buying, you're thinking about winning because you're eyeballing somebody else.
Mm.
And you get a round of applause at the end of it. A round of applause for a new mortgage, new mortgage holder, and going a few hundred thousand above reserve.
It's just wonderful.
And it's only when all the other buyers go away. This is why the agents get you inside as quickly as possible to sign the contract, because then you can't pull out, right?
Yeah,
then you've done it. Because once all the other buyers have gone away, once the applause has died down, is where you think, oh, I might have paid too much. I'm not sure. But yeah, so I think because you see them selling on the street, it increases the volatility of the market, because miss out on two or three auctions, you think to yourself, I'm not going to miss out on the next one. We're going to stretch our budget. And most people do end up stretching their budget.
Mm, yeah. Mm. And so your role in the buyer's advocacy of that is to work alongside a client to stop them from just raising, or is it the voice of reason on the shoulder, so to speak, to be able to say, well, look, you know, there are other houses around.
Honestly, I mean, the way that most of the first home buyers, and I'm successful with some and not so successful with others, that really, you know, kind of take on board everything that you say, but they still want to go for that product. But a lot of the time I'm saying to them, this isn't what you do much better. You're only going to be in it for 5 years, whatever. That's your plan, right? Your 5 to 7 year plan. You're going to do much better if we come off this little townhouse on this little handkerchief pocket of land on the main road in Hampton. We can go and buy something. Let's go out a couple of suburbs and get something that gives you the chance further down the line to do kind of some development to it. Something's going to get you better. It's going to set you up better. Because let's face it, right? If you take out the fire sector in Australia's economy, we're going backwards.
Mm. That's finance, right? Insurance and real estate.
So, yeah. Yep. So the government is always, it's their first port of call always when the economy is going backwards to pump money into that sector. It happened in 2008. It was in Wayne Swan's book when he was talking about what happened in 2008. And he said, you know, Paulson called him from the US and said, if we can just stop the housing market crashing, we'll be okay. And so that, you know, the their first port of call is to pump house prices. And that's what you're seeing now with the incentives, with the bank loosening, with this kind of, you know, this, I mean, what did the Royal Commission do? Nothing really. I mean, the HEM was tested in the courts by ASIC and failed under Westpac. I mean, now what the mortgage brokers are saying, well, you know, just be careful with your spending for 6 months because they'll look at it for the six. They're not going to look at it before that. So just cut down 6 months prior to yourself getting a mortgage and then we can increase. And most first home buyers at the moment aren't going through the banks. I say most. I mean, that might be, I think it's one in three or something, or mortgages has been done outside of the banking sector. So, you know, I mean, it's kind of been driven from that end because of incentives. And we'll get to 2020 and then you get the home buyer deposit scheme that will come in, which might be expanded to, you know, you can borrow on a 95%.
Well, to your point, Josh Frydenberg's now, you know, set up a meeting with the RBA governor, and they're actually trying to lower the inflation target so that the basically force the RBA to cut rates further, which again gets down to this whole, you know, we don't want to spend money on infrastructure, et cetera, and go into debt. We want the RBA to try and reflate the housing bubble. So we're seeing this actually being driven by the government. They're trying to, you know, use the old tried and true Howard government
mantra
of basically pumping private debt to pump up the economy again. And we're saying, and housing is obviously the key conduit.
Okay.
So yeah, it's been driven by the government.
Well, we're the second highest debt in the developed world. We need the highest there.
That's it. No, mate. We don't do silver.
Who's on top at the moment? Hong Kong?
Switzerland.
We need to add about 10%, I think.
Yeah, right.
Well, we can either do that by either keeping our GDP nice and low or raising our debt level.
Well, we're still doing both.
I'll just quickly put out, of course, for anyone watching in, that feel free to drop in some questions of us and, of course, Catherine along the way as well. I do have a quick question just while we're touching on that mortgage side. So you mentioned before, so was it one in three a non-bank lending sourced? Does a client get to you having pretty much got the finance under control, or are you getting anything back, I guess, over the course of the last couple of years with the, you know, Royal Commission and whatnot? Are you finding the debt spigot, so to speak, loosening, and people coming back to you and saying, look, you know, I can use you now because I can buy a house where maybe 12 months ago, you know, I got rubbed out?
Yeah. For home buyers, it's loosened quite significantly. They generally come to me once they have something in place, and then once they've secured, they'll shop around. So they'll get a pre-approval.
Yep.
And then they'll shop around to see whether they can get better rates.
Right.
And so they'll get that surety that they can, you know, that they can actually go out and buy. The finance for the developers and finance for the investors is not so easy. The developers are really having a hard time because what happens with the development, if you want to get finance to do a build, the valuers need to go through and develop the end prices. And valuers generally only use settled data. And so they're still using data that was from pre-boom time. So if you're buying something now and you're saying, well, look, you know, the end values are around 1.1 and then they go and val it up around a million, it doesn't add up. They can't get the finance and then they can't go and do the build. So that's really hard. The developers are still struggling with it. It's not gone back to where it was. But I mean, I think that, yeah, I mean, I think also, you know, the last, who wants to buy in a market where prices are going backwards? Who wants affordable housing, right? In a market like we've got, because you know prices have really got to go backwards. You know, you know that there's a long way to fall where you've pumped it up so much through, you know, policies, tax policies that we have, supply policies that we have, and banking policies.
Yep.
You know, it's not necessarily going to change. But I think that was the last 18 months you spend all your time saying to people, it's actually quite a good time to buy.
Good time to buy.
And because the market turns and you're suddenly flooded with people that say, okay, you know, we want to get in now and buy. Oh, I'm really sorry we didn't buy, you know, 12 months ago. And then, of course, all, you know, the media changes on it too. What was that? See that article that came out yesterday in the AFR about the rezoning? Somebody had bought
at my way. Yeah.
$300,000 sold it for $27 million. I had three phone calls from clients who sent me that article and called me up and said, Can you find us a broker? It's going to go.
Yeah.
You and me.
I've got a quick question. Now, we've all seen all these articles about the massive high-rise apartment faults. So we've got flammable cladding, we've got cracks developing, especially in Sydney, but it'd be in Melbourne as well. Are you seeing, buyers basically avoid apartments in favour of, detached housing? And do you think that might be inflating some of the demand for the detached housing?
I don't think people follow the media as closely as we follow the media, to be honest, when they're first home buyers. I think a lot of people kind of see it and they think, oh, it's something else that's... So I'll get buyers that come to me wanting to buy apartments and then I talk them off it and say, well, this is the reason why you don't. But it's not just apartments. It's the townhouses as well. And this is why you shouldn't go for something. You should never go and buy a new townhouse. Mm. You should wait a few years because then all the defects have kind of started to show themselves. You can get a building inspection and you can have a look at exactly then what you're buying. Mm. And part of that is really because land values are so high. Mm-hmm. And the developers cut corners. Mm. And the regulators, it's kind of like a whole, it runs all the way down the system. You know, everything gets passed from the use of preferred valuers and forged. These are the things that weren't brought up in the Royal Commission. You know, use of preferred valuers, the use of forged rental appraisals so that you can get a higher banking loan, things like that. Yep. Things that kind of work their way into the system. That enables
private certifiers.
Yeah, it enables a developer to walk away with a profit. Yeah. Over the last, because the end values were smashed so badly, because the market really was bad over the last 18 months. A lot of developers were going broke, and they still are now. Because if you do a project and you can't clear the loan at the end of it, then you've got nowhere to go. Mm. And I spoke to actually somebody just yesterday that had bought a brand new townhouse. She wasn't a client of mine, but she actually met her in a cafe. She says, "Oh, you're a real estate agent. This has just happened to me." So she's bought one, and because it's falling apart, the roof is falling apart, developer's gone bankrupt, they can't touch him, and they're left with having to go through the insurance scheme that's in place, which isn't very good. Mm. Okay. So, and you can't sell it on. Who's going to buy it from you?
Yeah, sure.
And so I think it's not just the apartments, it's also the new townhouses, and it's something that you've got to be very careful with. But I'm not generally seeing people walking away from that, because I don't think people really realise, unless they're following the news closely, how widespread the problem is.
Hey, it's only the biggest investment you'll make in your life, so why do any due diligence? Eh?
Well, this is it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people out there that spruik apartments. Mm. I mean, you're only listening. Who's on Facebook? Mm. Your Facebook ad feed. Mm. My Facebook ad feed is full of great-looking guys, bikini-clad women making... property speculation on their smartphone. You know, like, it's full of people that are kind of pumping these ideas of what you should go to. And because one of this is the we're all downsizing, we're all seeing the increase of single person households, and we're all going to go and live in apartments, and apartment prices are going to go wild. I think people kind of get caught in with that. There's so many free property seminars and people out there that are getting big commissions for selling new developments, huge commissions for selling them.
It's often the way, though. The more inferior the product, the harder the sales pitch and the needs to be, and the more commission that needs to be loaded up into it, I guess, as well. Yeah, fascinating.
Can also ask, a couple of months ago, we were getting tons and tons of reports about how people were trying to sell their land contracts out west of Melbourne on Gumtree, because a lot of people have bought, gets off the plan, and they have to settle, and they can't settle, and they're trying to on sell. Mm. Have you had much interaction with that market?
Not a lot, no.
No.
Not a lot. I think the way I see it is that the tax system dictates how we invest in Australia. I'm president of Prosper, and we do a lot of work on changing that tax. And so we know it's not going to change. No. You can do a lot of work with it. You can even really work on government policies to get them to change. So we saw that the Labor government starts to lean its policies in the direction that could take speculation from the housing market and could boost the productive sectors of the economy on the other side. And of course, nobody votes for it because nobody really wants to work for a living. Right? So you get, the way I see it, you've got 20, 30 years to make your money. Mm. And Australia dictates, it favours, if you're a rentier, you are favoured and protected by the system. Mm. You're protected by the system.
Rentier in being somebody who owns property instead of a renter.
Instead of a renter, yeah.
Yes.
Just a you're protected by the system, and you can see that the government's first port of call is to protect the property owners. The market's crashing. So forget the rest of the economy. Forget the real economy that makes things, and let's pump money into the speculative side of the economy. And, you know, so, I mean, the way that I deal with clients is that if you were really going to buy in Australia and pay the prices that you have to pay in Australia, there is no point unless you're going to treat it as an investment, because that's how the politics of this country treats it.
Yep, sure.
The political economy treats it as an investment, not as a home.
And part of it's, you know, Australia's got economic Stockholm syndrome. So we're basically, you know, since I guess John Howard started it in the 90s, we've structured entire economy around, you know, basically debt and Ponzi-nomics. And the fact of the matter is, you know, once you're down that road, it's very hard to unwind it. We've destroyed our productive sectors, manufacturing is dead, et cetera. So now it's all just based on people and debt. And, so to try and get yourself off that means you're going to have a massive, massive economic recession and totally restructure the economy. And no government's going to want to do that.
But no one's going to... You talk about... I mean, we had the Henry George dinner last night. We had Professor Frank Stillwell come and talk to us. And he's taught some big names in Australia, Anthony Albanese and Jessica Irvine and Michael Jander.
Jessica Irvine.
Stephen Keane. And but look, he actually gave a really good speech. And he was, you know, one of the questions kind of came up as to, you know, how are we going to change the system? You've got to vote for it.
Mm.
If the public aren't going to vote for the people that come in and say, okay, we're going to put these changes in place, or we're going to try and pull some speculation from the market. If no one's going to vote for it, you're on a, you know, and then some of the questions that came up were, well, maybe we should just compensate everybody. You know, if we said, we'll change policy, we'll put a land tax in place, you know, stamp duty to land tax. We've actually just produced a report by Tim Helm, who has thrown down all the arguments that are against the transition from stamp duty to land tax. But, you know, you have, well, maybe the way that we do it is you just compensate everybody. We just say to them, well, if your land value is going to go down, we'll give you compensation for it. You know, there are all these kind of questions as to how can we do it. But the bottom line is I don't think people's psychology is there. Mm. I don't think they really believe that if you go in with a capital gains tax, which is full, if you go in with a land tax, which is going to tax away those capital gains, that they are going to be better off under the system that we're advocating. And that's the key for us, I guess.
Well, it's a question, isn't it? A question, though, about saying, would Australia be better off? Because there's a bunch of individuals who won't be better off. And those individuals are you know, their children would be worse off, their grandchildren would be worse off, but they'll keep voting for themselves and saying, I'll grow my nest egg and I'll leave it to my kids and my grandkids, and they'll
figure it out.
sort the problem out.
Those ruddy, quiet Australians, I don't know.
You can talk about mortgage fraud, but the reason that you've got mortgage fraud is because it lends against increasing land value. So if you have policies to take away that increasing land value, you don't have the problems of mortgage fraud, right? You transformed the economy and you had a significant land tax and you had a different economy which discouraged speculation on land. We saw it with those two guys that came down from Texas, okay? You don't speculate on land growth. Well, you didn't at that. It's changed a little bit now, but you know, that's what I'm trying to say. You know, you got to change the economy. But the AFR article, where I get three immediate phone calls before I'd even read the article, you know, people wanting, we're thinking about buying in a greenfield area and I've got 300,000 wanted to be, you know, and you get three phone calls like that and you're thinking, well, you know, what's bought this? And then suddenly everyone wants to win.
It's aspirational.
The lottery.
Oh, well, that's right.
Yeah. Everyone wants to be a rentier.
Absolutely.
But so, can I just pull this back a little bit to the investment side? Because this is where I guess I'm interested in the whole, I've spoken a bit about it being still quite a fragile market in terms of saying we're throwing all this support to this market and trying to prop everything up. And if we do get an external shock, then, you know, we've already thrown all this stimulus at it. How, you know, we haven't got, well, you know, I'm sure there's more they can throw at it. But, you know, when you've emptied the cupboard of half your stimulus, then when something does hit, you haven't got the rest to throw at it. And I guess what I'm interested in is, it sounds as if the development side is still difficult, and we know there's a big hole coming in development. We've just seen all the latest GDP stats and the CapEx stats, and everything have come out showing that there is actually there doesn't seem to be an end to that, and so we're going to start seeing unemployment tick up in that area, and that's where we're interested in saying, okay, before you before you jump on and say, yeah, the housing boom's back, I've got to throw everything into this, we want to see whether the employment holds. Because if the employment doesn't hold, then we don't have to wait for an external event. You know, that'll be enough to give us. And so I guess I'm trying to get...
Yeah, no, I agree with it, Zach. And I think that's the question that we're asking. Like, this is such a crazy market. How can it possibly sustain? And I don't think that it can. I think that we'll go up and stagnate. And obviously, you know, there's all sorts of things going on globally which look like we could be pulled into a recession as well. I think what you've got to think, though, is that the reason that... If you look about it in terms of the cycle, right? So, I mean, I talk about it always in terms of the 18-year cycle because I don't see that much has changed that's going to pull us away from that. We're still, the economic rent is still flushing into land. Nothing's changed, particularly within the structure of the economy, that's going to change the cycle progressing, right? The reason it's so bad at the end is because the banks don't lend. The reason that it's been so bad in the middle was because the banks weren't lending. I don't think, no matter what happens, that the banks, where they are now, are going to stop lending again. And I don't think the government is going to stop pumping in. So no matter how sustainable this is, I don't think we're going to go back to where we were yet over the last 18 months. I think we've got another boom ahead of us before we get to that stage at the end of the cycle, you know, 25, 26, 27, 27 really, the peak in 25, 26, where things then are going to go down. Because then you've got the, you know, a lot of speculation that's been poured into the housing market. The other thing that is, I think, significant is that these are home buyers. It's a home buyer market. So the properties that are selling strongly are properties that appeal to home buyers who buy and then hold on. And they're not necessarily extending their budgets overly. You know, they're kind of, it's not like it's a real speculative market from the point that they're saying we've got to, you know, the bank is going to lend us 1.1 million, so we're going to spend 1.1. I've seen markets like that, and it's not quite like that. So it's not like everyone's throwing everything at the market. People are hearing a lot about the economy going into recession, and people are questioning it themselves. So they are being a little bit careful about what they spend. But home buyers hold on to their properties. They're not like investors that buy them and then...
Yeah, they hold on while they can. I guess that's what I guess what I look at is if you had a 2-4% increase in the unemployment rate over a short period of time, then there's a bunch of people who are selling houses not because
they want to,
just because they have to. There's no choice.
I think without a doubt the risks are there, and it's dependent on government spending.
Yeah, and that's where I'm trying to go with how much support are we seeing in that whole construction sector? Because it seems to me that what you're saying is it's still very hard for developers to get loans, and so while you might be going, yes, we're pumping the price back up in these areas, if the developers are still sitting in this air pocket, and they've probably got, I don't know, as all the existing ones start to come off, if there's an air pocket of 18 months to 2 years where before we start seeing approvals pick up again, is that's where the unemployment ticks up and the question about, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree. I mean, I think it's the questions that we're asking ourselves too. I mean, I think, you know, I've spoken to many colleagues, sales agents, buyer agents that are all saying the same. You know, it's a little bit crazy. How long can this current trend that we're seeing now sustain? But I mean, there's anything productive, at least with development. If you've got someone that's buying and then developing using builders and contractors and everything, it's playing into employment.
Yes.
So, you know, it's a question that needs to be asked. And I guess that's why with the clients that I deal with, I'm saying to them, don't go and buy something like this. You know, let's go and buy something that's going, because this is, if the market tanks again, these are the properties that are going to, you're going to really see that you've paid way too much for them, and they're not really going to give you much sort of going down the line. So you're not going to be able to do much with them. But yeah, look, I think all those fears are valid fears.
I honestly see a pretty weak upswing. Like, I mean, it's, you know, at the moment it's good. Next 6 months will probably be all right. But if you just look at the economy, I mean, unemployment is certainly going to rise. There's no doubt about it. We've got the dwelling construction that's going to fall quite hard in the next few years. The approvals data proves that to a point. Infrastructure investment's already peaked. You know, obviously we've got very, very weak wages growth. The economy is effectively on public sector life support. So the biggest driver of domestic demand at the moment is government spending. And that's not sustainable. So, you know, it's the economy, macroeconomic speaking, is incredibly weak at the moment. And yeah, sure, the housing market's picking up, and the question is, does housing lead the economy, or does the economy lead housing? You know,
And more importantly than that, it's the development side. Because I'll go down to you that, look, I think you can make an argument that they're both pretty intertwined if it's development.
Yeah.
But if it's just house prices, if the development's falling away and all it is house prices going up, that's where I start to say...
To draw an analogy, right? So we had the late 2000s mining boom. That was massive for the economy. It was massive for two reasons. We had commodity prices obviously went through the roof, but that was met by a huge amount of mining development, which created the jobs and which basically disseminated the income across the economy. We're now going through a not quite as big, but similar commodity price boom, but it's having no real impact because there's no mining boom to go along with that. And the housing market's kind of akin to
development.
That's right. Yeah. So the housing market's akin to that. We've got a price pickup, but we've got development crashing.
Mm.
So there's no real economic dividend being fed through.
Yep.
And we're not even, despite the wealth effect, et cetera, we're not even getting a consumption pickup. Consumption's dead. And in fact, it's on life support because we've got no income growth. And the only thing that's even holding up consumption at the moment is that the household savings rate has again crashed to a post-GFC low. So effectively, households are borrowing to spend at the moment, which again is unsustainable. So although the housing market's obviously picking up nicely right now, and it could last 6 months, so probably rise a little bit next year, I just cannot see a return to previous boom time conditions like we saw after prior housing downturns, where Sydney and Melbourne went up 50% or something. It's going to be very weak, and in fact, I'd be very surprised if in 2 years Sydney and Melbourne even recover the last peaks from the last downturn.
So, Catherine, actually, just...
Some individual houses have
to... Oh, no, yeah, of course, no, I'm talking across the market. I mean, Sydney went down 15% and Melbourne went down, 12, 13 or something. I can't see them even recovering to those levels in the next 2 years.
Catherine, do you think that the existing demand you're seeing at the moment, does that feel more like that's been, I guess, latent demand in terms of we had 18 months of poor conditions and people sort of sat in their hands and did nothing and now they're going out to buy?
Yeah, I do.
It's not really the bring forward yet, where it's like, oh, wow, I can borrow 95%,
I completely agree with that. I mean, that's my experience. You get a flood of stock and no one wants to buy because the prices are going backwards, so they all wait. And I had clients that wrote to me going, it's a good time to buy. They write back to you, we're going to wait for the election. Get away, we're worried if Labour get in and what that's going to do to prices even further. So everyone's sitting on their hands, and then suddenly when the stock starts to dry up because everyone's sold who needs to sell, and now buyers are saying, well, you're just getting the very few that need to sell going on, and the election passes, then all the buyers that have been waiting kind of rush in. So it's a little bit like, it's like a rift of time, the buyers are rushing in and there's no stock, suddenly all the stock's gone. And so really it is a feature of low stock at the moment. It's a feature of low stock, it's a feature of first home buyer incentive, it's a feature of the bank starting to lend and more confidence coming into the system that negative gearing is now, as you put so beautifully, dead, buried, cremated. That's just gone. Let's not touch that one again. Whether the capital gains go along with that.
No, it's gone too.
And on that, Catherine, so that list I think is fantastic. One other one, I guess, and is it 14 or 15 years you've been in the property market?
Just over 15 years.
Over 15. Yeah. So you've seen bank rates, so RBA and obviously vis-a-vis mortgage rates as high as we've seen them for a while. Yeah. And now, of course, they're at the other end of the spectrum. Do you mind just sort of sharing a little bit on perhaps if there's any driving or is there any impetus?
Normally the rates affect it where you get like a few moves in one direction, one after the other. If you're just doing slight changes in rates as the economy is improving, then obviously the housing market is going to respond to that. What I saw, for example, in 2007 is when lending rates, when every time that the RBA met, and this is a real feature of the end of the cycle because the speculation's going crazy and nobody can see any problem with the economy and everything feels absolutely great. And throughout the course of 2007, and I was actually working for a different buyer advocacy agency at the time, and I had a boss that was really clued up. He wasn't kind of clued up to the economy, but he had a good feel of what was going on the ground. And every time the RBA met, they raised rates. And we got to the end of 2007 and we turned up at an auction. And at that point, it was almost like that if a house had been auctioned and one next door was auctioned the next week, it would go for 30,000 more. And everyone would go, this is unbelievable. It's just like people were buying before Christmas and then flipping in January and getting all their money back and stamp duty and a profit. profit on top of it. You know, it's like it was an unbelievable market. And after the kind of last rate rise at the end of 2007 or kind of approaching that, he came up to me and he said, prepare for a passing. He said, I think that last rate rise was too much. And so, I mean, when you kind of get that and then the borrowing rates are so high and the productive sectors of the economy have been continually eroded away, and it's all this kind of speculation, and of course the cracks are really beginning to appear, that's normally where you'll get, you know, it'll just be too much. The wage growth, productive sectors of the economy won't be able to support the private debt. And so that I mean, I remember kind of times like that, but these kind of small changes in rates, it's not so much that they're going to. I think the significant thing at the moment is the bank loosening. How far are they going to be able to unwind and start lending again? That to me is a real factor. And they're still cautious lenders, but also the move away from the banking system. And, you know, then you've kind of got to look, you know, if you kind of look at the real estate clock as we look at it in the 18-year cycle, you know, you kind of get to the end of it. And there's always an era of easy money. And I think we have to look at where that money is going to come from. And it's not necessarily going to be from the big four. And of course, you've got these are bank lending. You also got cryptocurrencies. You've got platforms now that have been created for people to buy in Bitcoin. And I think that early in April, there was the first ever auction in Bitcoin was in Australia.
For a house.
The East Coast. Yep. Did you read that? East Coast Australia. I don't know whether it passed in and they had two bidders that they were kind of going. So I don't know. I kind of look at all of these things and think there's people are going to push their money where they think they're going to get the gains. And if you write land out of that, you can't write land out of that, right? Because it's the land driver. Kind of sits at the bottom of that, and all the architecture is kind of built around that monopoly speculation. So those are the kind of things I look at. So I mean, I think that I agree 100% with what Lee's saying. I don't think that what we've got now is kind of built on a really solid foundation, and a lot of it is going to depend on kind of what happens next year. And I think we've got a stock market panic coming up, and all of that's going to
So you think that if there wasn't, say, an external shock that affected our stock markets, then we'd see, you know, a lot of people. And I guess it's important for us as well because, you know, obviously Nucleus, well, we look after a lot of people's housing deposits more often than not. You know, that's where, you know, particularly anyone that's sort of in their 20s and 30s have chosen us to sort of beat the, you know, as we mentioned, the low interest rate environment that we find ourselves in.
I personally feel that wherever we're going to go in 2020 is not going to be like a 2008, right? I don't think it's going to be a devastation to the housing market where you're going to see prices crash down. I think that that's going to come later, right?
Right.
So I feel that this is going to be, if we're going to go into recession, it's going to be fairly short-lived.
Yep. Okay.
That's my own feeling on it, right? Mm-hmm. I kind of feel that if you're really looking, but the structure of the economy has not changed, right? At some point, when all of that is cleared, prices are going to start rising again from a different, but you're going to see a construction boom come back in because the money is going to be, that it will ease up on development and everything. So to me, if you're going in to buy now, you're better off targeting those sites where you still can get good deals because there's not a massive amount of buyer competition. When you're in them, there's three numbers you're dealing with in real estate, right? One is what the vendors want. The vendors aren't overly high at the moment. They came down. Mm. Takes them a while, but they did come down over that 18 months. You know, the other one is what you think it's worth from an investment perspective, then where the other buyers are. And it's the other buyers that really push the market one way or the other. And if you're going, you know, there's still sites out there that are good to sit on, right? So that's kind of where I think that eventually I still think it's there's decent deals to be got out there if you stay away from where the heat is.
Get away from the mistakes in the industry as well, I guess. As we mentioned.
Also, just worth adding, the last few housing bubbles or whatever off. I mean, we've had a bubble for a while, but the last few housing upswings after prices have moderated have been led by investors as well. And at the moment, as Catherine said, the investors, you know, they're still on the bench. So that obviously until they come out of the woodwork and start going mad again, you know, it'll obviously tame the upswing.
And I guess that just leads into, from a sustainability point of view, if we see sort of this latent first home buyer surge at the moment, for want of a better word, pull back or, you know, be serviced, you know, be fulfilled in purchasing property, Do you think then that we'll just see a natural resurgence of investors sort of soaring back into the market, which is that next leg higher?
I think you've got to watch what the first home buyers do, because they pump it from the bottom end and it causes a price wave up, right? So if you're an investor selling your house or developer selling and you're suddenly getting 100,000, 200,000 more for your end value than you thought you were going to do, where's that money going to go? It's going to go back into the land. So it will kind of pause. And that's why I think that we'll travel over in terms of the housing. Okay.
Yep.
It's not like it's a boom in terms of, you know, like you said, there's still the weaknesses there.
Yep.
But that's kind of where I see it. That's why.
Mm.
And then, of course, once the investors get wind of that and everything's kind of been played out, and especially if there's any, you know, whatever happens in the stock market, there's not many places where you can put your money at the moment, is there?
Mm.
Right? You're not going to put it in cash.
No, fair enough.
So, I mean, property is something I think where people kind of look and they, like I said with the article, or had another buyer saying to me, you know, he's being told to invest in Townsville. You looked at Townsville? Unbelievable. Like, you know, and of course, and not only that, on the ABC, they did an interview on the ABC about Townsville, right? Mm. Interview about this woman, her house is 100,000 below what she initially paid for it, and it's terrible. They finished that interview with the commentator saying, but the people in the know or whatever are saying that in 6 months prices are going to be back to where they were. And it's all going to, how is that going to happen? It's only going to happen if investors rush. It's not going to happen from home buyers. Home buyers aren't going to look and say, well, we'll go back in now. Yeah. And so, I mean, it's those types of things. You got a lot of commentary around that, and people listen to it and they write to me and say, well, we're thinking of investing in Townsville.
Yeah, right. Wow. Yep.
You know, like, that to me, I always think that's just... Yeah. Do you read anything? You know, like, I don't know. I just think it's a bit insane.
Yeah.
It's insane, but that's what you're kind of dealing with. People, I guess, you know, for us it's different because we spend all our time reading and looking and researching and looking back at history and noticing the patterns of it. But, you know, other people don't. They got jobs and they come back and they want to make... They want to look after their families and they want to invest in something, and because they're not going to retire on their wage.
Yeah,
they've got to speculate somewhere, and you know, property is a favored place. It's considered far safer from a lot of people's perspectives than it is putting your money in stocks. We've only just exceeded, you know, the stock market's only just exceeded its previous peak. How long did it take to get there?
Yeah, well, that's true.
You've earned 10 years to earn a dollar.
So that puts us onto I'll pass over to you as well to obviously offer up how people, our listeners, can get in touch with you and those sort of things as well. Yeah, if you'd like.
Yeah, so my company at cashmoreco.com.au, CASHMOREco. They can go there and find all my contact details and
get in touch if they need a hand.
Yeah, absolutely. I write for Portfolio Publishing as well. Cycles, Trends and Forecasts newsletter for Portfolio Publishing.
Okay.
So they can go and subscribe to that and
go from there.
Learn how to speculate.
Very good. All right. We'll have to check it out. All right. Well, on that note, we'll finish up. Thanks very much for your time today. It was great having you in, and we look forward to getting you
again. It's always a lot
of
fun. Really enjoy it. Thanks.
Good on you, Catherine. So that zooms us into what's coming up next week. And so it's been known as the ticking debt time bomb, by that it could be anything at this point, but we're going to be looking at US debt levels, so I think federal debt levels and some impacts.
More corporate debt levels.
Or corporate debt levels, okay, big pardon. So there you go, and so we'll be diving into that, and hopefully we'll have Dave, our chief strategist, to throw some viewpoints in on that one as well. Same bat time, same bat channel, Thursday the 12th of September at 12:30 PM Australian Eastern Standard Time on Thursday. And on that note... Well, that's it for now, and thanks for watching. If you like what you heard today and you'd like to hear more, head over to nucleuswealth.com/subscribe. Give us your email address, and in return, we'll send you a weekly email with new webinar topics, links for our podcasts, and other news from Nucleus Wealth. I certainly hope you've got something out of today, as I have, and we'll look forward to catching you at the next one. Cheers.